Welcome to another episode of Lore Council, the podcast from Shieldwall Productions, where we talk about everything and anything background lore and fluff related. And on this episode, we have myself, John.
And Jacob.
And dear listeners, it is time once again for our Halloween special. And historically, we've talked about things that are creepy. That are, like, we spooky. Started off with spooky things, like the just the undead from Warhammer Fantasy, and then last year we talked about just generally creepy things, and this time Jacob had an interesting idea, because sometimes in some, at least Halloween is seen as the time when the veil between life and death is the thinnest. So we thought, well, the scariest ways to die in 40K.
Yeah, and there are a lot of ways to die in 40K.
Yes, and we will not be covering all of the ways to die, because we would be here for even longer than an Austin length podcast, and we don't have that kind of time right now.
And there's
no one does do, because we'd be here until we died.
Yeah, and there's just about as many horrifying ways to die, but we have thought up some very especially scary ways to die.
We have notes.
Indeed.
Yes. You can lead in with kind of the one that springs to mind, which is the Gellerfields Folly.
Yeah. So, for those who don't know, Gellerfields are what accompany 40K ships as they travel throughout the warp. It is the very small, psychic force field
that maintains a pocket of reality around the ship.
Indeed. And when those go out, usually there's not more than one or a couple, depending on the size of the ship. A lot of things start to get very spooky very fast, and people start to die
very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yes.
So picture this, you're an Imperial Navy rattling. You've been, contracted or,
conscripted, voluntold, whatever.
Yeah. And you're on your ship, and then you wake up drenched in a cold sweat, and things don't look too real anymore.
No.
You think perhaps, you're having a nightmare, but
it's all too real. The walls are
It's a nightmare, fact, but it's walls, while you're awake.
Yes, and the walls are in fact bleeding.
Yep. You're now crying blood. The walls are trying to talk to you.
And you realize that's not cold sweat.
No.
That's cold blood. And it's all over you, but it's not yours. It didn't come from anyone in your room, because you were lucky enough to have your own habitation quarters.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not your blood, because you're physically fine for now.
But, you might open that door, and instead of leading to the hallway of the ship, it leads to an open room full of, let's say, the particular pocket of space that inhabits your hallway is now a Slaaneshi demonic pit of...
It's a Slaaneshi grotto.
Yeah.
So everyone is screaming in both agony and pleasure.
Yeah.
As they're being ripped limb from limb, or disemboweled, or slowly flensed.
So, you quickly close your door.
And think, wrong door.
Wrong door. So you try your closet, thinking you're going to grab some clothes first. Maybe a nice void suit.
Mm-hmm. Or even just go for whatever weapon you've been able to smuggle aboard.
Yeah. But you open it, and it's no longer your closet either.
No. It's a pit of shadows. And as you start to scream, the Gellerfields come back online, and it's all gone.
Yep. Except for a little a little dust that's stayed around.
Mm-hmm.
A little purple dust.
You have survived the encounter. Unfortunately, the rest of your ship hasn't.
No.
The Gellerfields came back by themselves. Everyone else is dead.
Well, besides, the...
Navigator.
Navigator.
But he doesn't really come, because he can't... He can get you back out of the warp, and that's nice.
Yeah.
But then you two get to decide who gets to eat the other when one of you starves to death.
Probably the Navigator.
Yeah. Well, Navigator will eat you, because if it looks like you're going to eat him, he'll just take his little bandana off his eye and blast you to pieces.
Exactly. Well, there might not be a whole lot left of you to eat. Be cooked, though.
Yeah.
You don't really want that Gellerfield flickering, even for brief moments, because you will lose so many crew members.
Indeed.
For the brief amount of time they shut off.
Now let's say you make it through the warp and the Gellerfields have remained intact, and you come into the pocket of space that's your kind of halfway jumping point, because you make it in short jumps or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're waiting to make the next jump, your ship comes under attack by Dark Eldar Raiders. This is unfortunate for you. Because if the crew is not, your entire crew is not able to repel the boarders, there's a good chance you might be taken prisoner. And there's a lot of different places you could go as a Dark Eldar prisoner. The one you don't really want to go to is the Homunculus' laboratory. Because it's not so much they do experiments to further the cause of science, so much as to see how much pain living things can endure. And they have become very good at this art form that they call it.
You think Saw was bad?
Oh yeah, no, they'll make sure you are allowed to feel every bit of agony long past when you might otherwise have been able to. They'll hook you up to their version of life support systems.
And those are probably better than...
Live vivisections will be the least of your worries. They typically go and kind of do their own form of bodily modifications. So we've got piercings and tattoos, right?
Mm-hmm.
They, with their elongated dark ears, have been known to flense them into intricate spiderweb patterns that then lay on the side of their head because they're otherwise useless.
Wow.
Yes. And that's what they do for fun for themselves. They will take you and skin you over and over and over and put you back together again each time because they're skinning you very, very neatly. And you'll feel every single moment of it. They'll leave you without your skin for a bit, and then stitch it all back onto you, and it'll be very painfully grafted back onto you. And then they'll do it again the next day, or the next hour, or whatever, because they'll do it very quickly. They'll see just what bits of you on the inside that they can take out and have you still be alive, which it turns out is more than you might think.
Yeah.
They'll see what happens if they place your blood with someone else's, or your blood with something else's. And if you're lucky, you'll die. If not, you'll turn into one of their warp beasts or warp critters or other... genetically modified abominations that they sometimes take into battle.
Yeah, not fun. And then you're probably just going to be killed by orbital bombardment or something.
Yeah, you'll die anyway, but yeah.
There's no fun way to come out of that.
Yeah, and if you're not taken to the Homunculus' lab, you'll perhaps be taken to the pit, the gladiator pits that they've got there for their witches and such.
Yeah.
As sport. You won't stand a chance.
No.
But that's not the point. The point is for you to exist to spatter blood and gore over the audience.
Yeah.
To die in interesting ways to the Dark Eldar. Which would actually be a mercy compared to being a Homunculus' prisoner.
Very true. Not to mention, you know, they will take some prisoners and, you know, just warp their sense of reality to think, you know, the most horrible things are happening.
Yes.
And then just when you think you died, you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do it all over again.
Yep.
For an eternity, or what seems like an eternity.
It's actually only been a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yes. And similar to this, it would be to be taken, if your ship is raided by pirates,
mm-hmm.
Space pirates, if they're not Dark Eldar, they might be Emperor's children. If you're particularly unlucky, they might be Emperor's children who answer to Fabius Bile.
Oh, God. Fucking Emperor's children.
Apothecary.
That's honestly, hands down, the most horrifying thing is just having to, you know...
Deal with the Emperor's children directly. Now, if you're a space marine, you can at least have a chance of killing them. If you're human and you're taken prisoner by, say, the warband of Fabius Bile, you're going to have the exact same things than you as a homunculus, because he's learned from them. He's been taught by them, made deals with them to be taught their secrets, and you'll be turned into one of what he calls the Terrata. Similar sort of thing, he's a horrible flesh abomination. But it's a bit more crude and a lot more painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, it's crazy to say. It's more painful.
But the Dark Elder blades are sharper.
Yeah.
Exceptionally sharp compared to Fabius Bile.
Very really, true.
Because he doesn't really need them to be sharp when he's got Space Marine strength going behind him.
Yeah.
A blade isn't dull to him because he's got enough strength to make it not matter.
I feel the most horrifying thing is wanting to be able to kill the Emperor's children because they're Emperor's children, but not being able to.
Because you're a normal human spud and they're Emperor's children. And you are, in fact, alone.
Yeah.
You're not going to get lucky and be able to take... more than perhaps one of them down, even if you're properly armed.
Yeah.
And the problem is, they'll enjoy it. Which takes all the fun out of it.
I know.
Like, it reminds me of a bit in the book Angel Exterminatus, where they've just, the Emperor Children and Ironwares have just gone into a clash against some survivors from the Isfahan drop site massacre. And some Emperor Children are refugees aboard an Iron Warrior ship because their ship got exploderated. And the Iron Warriors apothecary is walking through trying to tend to them, and one of them is like, he goes to one of the Emperor's children. He's like, no one ever told me what that dying could feel so extraordinary. And then he dies. Like, all of his blood vessels are ruptured, and he's slowly bleeding out inside his own skin, and he's loving every second of the sensation.
Fucking masochists.
You could gut them, and they'd love you for it. Like, at the drop site massacre itself, one of them got his face blasted off with a melta, and he replied to the, I think, salamander who did it, thank you, that was exquisite, and then killed him. Fighting the Emperor's children is just, it's not fun for anyone except for them.
They're just jizzing all over the place while you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's possibly the worst thing.
Shit, speaking of Emperor's children, the worst thing you could possibly do, or one of the terrifying ways to die would be to kill Lucius the Eternal. Because, congratulations, you just killed Lucius the Eternal. I hope you didn't enjoy it at all whatsoever in any way at all. Because guess what? He might be dead for now,
But the second you take any sort of pride or satisfaction in the act, his incorporeal form will slowly start to possess you, and you'll start to resemble him. And then you'll be him, because he's taken over your vessel and burst forth as himself again. And your face is now added to all the others on his armor, perpetually screaming, because you took pride in killing him. He is the Eternal for a reason. Because if you take any amount of pride in killing him, you become him. Because he is Eternal.
Yeah.
And prideful. Again, going back to Angel Exterminatus, a Raven Guard Shadow Captain kills him for the first time. And as he's killing him, because he's killing him, I'm just like, oh boy, that's going to be a plot point. But as he's killing him, he's like, I take no pleasure in this. I take no joy, no satisfaction. You are simply a dog that needs to be put down. And because that is before he's Lucius the Eternal, I think that was a nod to that future incarnation of Lucius. Is that this is the one person that took no satisfaction in killing him. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Emperor's children are grody as fuck.
Yeah.
They're not the only Legion, though. But do you have something else in your list? Because I could just keep going through mine, but I want to give you a chance to talk.
Yeah. Possibly another one of the most horrifying ways to die in 40K is the Slaught.
Yes.
So, the Slaught are a very kind of hidden faction of Xenos in 40K. There are very, very few of them.
Yes, and there used to be more. Actually, I'm glad you brought that. They're a migratory species, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
But they migrate very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when they migrate, they're similar to the Tyranids, they're an unstoppable onslaught. Onslaught.
Yeah.
But not in quite as horrifying a way as the Tyranids in terms of the bio consumption.
Yeah.
And they were a very big problem during the Great Crusade. Iron Warriors were tasked to deal with them, and one of their grand companies got decimated by it. But now they're not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
Largely speaking. But there are still pockets here and there, but they haven't been as huge of a threat as they once were.
But they're never more than, like, one or two. They're
right.
They kind of just hide in the shadows of large hive cities or worlds. And to track one down, it's very, very difficult.
Now, what does a slot look like, Jacob?
Now, a slot is an amalgamation of thousands or tens of thousands of maggots.
Gross.
Yeah. And they're surprisingly very intelligent. They're about the size of a person, and they usually wear long robes with hoods.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's even difficult for factions of the Inquisition to track them down, because they're crafty bastards. There are several different kinds. There's, like, slot overseers, vassal constructs, but the way they feed is they literally just start to turn you into maggots by eating you alive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
It is.
Yeah.
It's like, whew, just all those maggots, like, ugh.
Crawling over you, eating you alive, and you feel every second of it, I'm sure.
Yeah. And they're also pretty powerful psychic creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they can ensure that you feel every minute of that sensation by fixing you in place and keeping you alive, your soul alive, long after your body would have given out.
Yeah. And all their technology is also nightmarishly, like, powerful, but it's also made out of organic material.
Ugh. Yeah. That's the worst.
Whew. And the fact that they can turn other people into slot as well and create more, just
makes you almost wish for a Tyranid invasion.
Yeah. Because the only time it's going to happen is you're going to be some poor, you know, imperial hive worker
who's in some backwater no-name planet.
Yeah, who decided to take, you know, an alley shortcut
on his way home from the factory.
And then now you're being eaten alive by thousands of maggots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of your last thoughts might be, great, I will be absent from work tomorrow, so the punishment will be my family will be purged.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Imperium.
Not to mention, they're also covered in, like, a viscous, necrotic, like, mucus that just starts to make your body rot away. And it can stretch and maneuver its body mass at will.
Oh, that's a fucking bummer.
Yeah,
they're horrifying, but it's also a bummer.
They're also incredibly hard to kill because, you shoot it and you kill, like, what? Maybe 100 or 1,000 of these maggots.
If it's average size, if it's, you know, the size of an average size man, at least in the U.S. is about 6 foot. That's a lot of maggots, Jacob.
Yeah.
That's a lot of maggots.
Also, the most...
Fire. You need fire. Not bolt round, not las guns, nothing. Fire.
The bolt round probably won't even go off.
No, just, well, I mean,
maggots
as it makes,
are way too soft for...
I mean, if it's man size, it's surely dense enough to trigger the mass reactive round.
But that's the thing. If it's all maggots, like, if it hits it, they'll either, like, move out of the way or just kind of get pushed out of the way because they're not solid.
Right. I guess it depends on the particular bolt round being used. If it's, like, say, your Imperial Guardsman's heavy bolter, it probably won't. But if it's a Space Marine's bolt gun, they do have that targeting reticle on it. So when it reaches the distance to the target, it'll go off. Yeah.
But I mean,
distance plus a couple of inches, so it makes sure that it goes off inside the target, because that's how bolt guns work sometimes.
On some random hive world, though, you're probably some poor PDF trooper trying to.
You
fight
got a las gun if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So you got a properly functioning las gun if you're lucky, and by lucky I mean if you said the proper prayers to it.
Yeah.
Remember, kids, pray to your las guns.
Pray they can find a bolt, find a flamer in storage for you guys.
And pray that you're the one who gets it.
Yep.
Because then what you're throwing down range is actually more effective than your comrades, so you actually get a sense of, I can win this, I can survive! So it'll help your own personal morale.
Can you imagine the smell of that burning?
I don't want to.
Yeah.
Jacob, I don't really want to. Though, speaking of things rotting away in necrotic and all that sort of thing, probably one of the top five, I'll even make this bold claim, top five horrifying ways to die in the 41st millennium, or just 40k in general, is to be virus bombed.
Yeah.
Because for those of you who are familiar, you're probably like, yep, I agree. And if you don't, I don't know why. But for those of you who are not familiar with what a virus bomb does, it is a biochemical weapon that is dropped from orbit onto a planet. Either in, you know, small doses, or if you want to really nuke it from orbit, they cover the entire planet in this stuff. And it doesn't take much. It is also, it's a highly virulent kind of plague bomb. When it goes off, it consumes all living material. Flesh, blood, bone, leaves, anything that's got organic components to it, will be consumed, except for perhaps raw metal.
Yeah, and probably raw carbon as well.
Yeah. Which won't matter.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. Now, as it consumes this stuff, it does so, it melts it. Whatever.
It turns it into
mud.
Goop.
Into goop. Very quickly. If you breathe even a little bit of it, you're toast. You'll melt from the inside out. If you're not covered by power armor, if you are covered by power armor isn't good enough to keep this out.
Neither are void suits.
The filtration systems aren't good enough. You need vacuum locks, or to just get further down enough from the surface of the planet for it to work. On Isfahan 3, the initial battle of the Horus Heresy, really, when the traitor legions of the Sons of Horus, Emperor's Children, World Eaters, and Death Guard were purging the loyalist elements from their ranks, they virus bombed them from orbit. Fortunately, a word of warning was able to get sent to the surface of the planet, and the Space Marines on the planet were able to get into bunker complexes where they could seal off, but the Sons of Horus had to go into the catacombs of the city that they were attacking and managed to go deep enough to where they could survive. The Space Marines that didn't, though, were melting in their armor before their armor, too, melted a bit.
Yeah. The only thing that really helps is, like, some dreadnought patterns of armor will...
Some. It has to be fully structurally intact, though, because on the trench line side, where the Death Guard were fighting, one of the Death Guard officers was trying to get as many into the bunker as possible and was willing to sacrifice himself, and the dreadnought who was standing with there is like, you need to get to safety. He's like, he's like, no, everyone has to get in. And he's like, what about you? He's like, the dreadnought said, I'll be fine. And as he slams the door shut and he's melting up against the side of the dreadnought, he looks up and sees a crack in the dreadnought's sarcophagus and said, you lied. He's like, I die on my terms. And then the dreadnought did the most metal thing ever. He didn't let the virus bomb consume him. He self-detonated his own dreadnought reactor cores. Metal as fuck, but also horrifying.
Yeah. And then after that, after it's turned everything into goop,
there's fumes, and these fumes are highly, highly volatile. All it takes is a single lance shot from orbit to ignite it, which was done during Isfahan 3, and it cooked the entire planet. And it'll cook anywhere that this fume from the virus bomb is, it'll set it all ablaze, which will burn itself out very quickly, but very hot. That's usually enough to nuke a planet, to destroy all life, all living matter on a planet.
And the smallest class ships in 40K can carry these.
But usually don't, because it is such a powerful thing that really only those of the highest, highest, highest authority can carry it.
Yeah.
Back in 30K, it was Primarchs and
expedition fleet command ships only, flagships of expeditionary fleets were the only ones who could really carry it or have the authority to dish out, usually only Primarchs.
Yeah.
Nowadays in 40K,
it's like it's Lord Admirals of the Imperial Navy or Inquisitors.
Not even Space Marine Chapter Masters.
And it's only some Inquisitors.
Only some Inquisitors, yeah.
Because you have to get your hands on one, mm-hmm. and there are not a whole lot of them.
No.
See, what I also think is horrifying about it, imagine, you know, the people trying to escape into those deep, deep, like, bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
But they let a little bit in, so it
a little bit is enough.
See,
because it feeds off the organic matter, yeah. and it makes more of itself.
But it's they closed the door and sealed the airlocks. Now, after the planet burns,
there's
imagine
a little bit left of it.
10,000 years later,
mm-hmm.
somebody's when like, "What's to, in this airlock?" And they open it up,
reseal it, and they, you know, a couple hundred years later, whenever the Imperium goes to reclaim that planet, when they reclaim that planet, they open that bunker complex, and it's still in there and it's waiting because it's all still in the air. Comes on out, and anything organic in the nearby area gets eaten.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's fucking horrifying.
Horrifying. It's like a lingering plague.
Yeah. Now, one of the topmost horrifying ways. Demonic incursions.
Yeah, and there's a wide variety of how these can happen.
It's like all the most...
Well, there's about four different varieties.
Yeah.
And I'll give it five. Five being a common, because the four varieties are a Cornate demonic incursion, mm-hmm. a Slaaneshi demonic incursion, a Zinjitin demonic incursion, and a Nurgle demonic incursion. The fifth being a combination.
Yeah.
Of any of those.
It's like all the most horrifying flavors of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
All mixed in.
Yep.
And they all taste terrible.
Yep. Yep. Well, actually, because the thing is, with at least the Slaaneshi ones, with the demonets specifically, they emanate this kind of musk
mm-hmm.
that puts their victims, we'll call them victims, in a state of absolute bliss and infatuation with the demonettes. They're horrible, female-like demons.
Well,
but it makes them completely calm and docile and infatuated and makes them quite happy. And they die with a smile so they don't run away so the demonettes can properly eviscerate them in the most creative ways possible.
Yeah.
That's the demonette side.
On the Nurgle side, it can go a lot of ways.
It can go a variety of ways. You can get your similar to your virus bombs, where things are just being just decayed as they are alive. You got your always a crowd favorite zombie plague,
yeah.
usually led by Lord Typhus, Herald of Death from the Death Guard,
mm-hmm.
or which is also the Destroyer Plague, the host of the Destroyer Plague.
And they'll be so jolly while doing it.
Yes, that's the thing. Nurgle incursion, at least half of the participants are going to be in a good mood.
Yeah.
If you fall to them, you'll also be in a good mood. It'll be terrifying the entire time. Now, I'm glad you brought this up, because Nurgle plagues can come in a variety of forms. Yes, there's the sticky kind.
Yeah.
But there is a different kind that I read about in like a short stories compilation of 40K stories. And starts out with a guy who's the guy comes back from like naval duty, whatever, to watch on his home planet the orchestral kind of triumph of one of those planet's local musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who hears it starts the chorus of it starts repeating the song ad nauseum to the point where they're just kind of possessed by it. And as they keep repeating it to anyone else who hears it, as they go screaming out of the concert hall, it infects everyone else. Sounds like
a mind.
It's mind control of a form, but it also sounds Slaaneshi, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When they find, by the time they get to the last bastion of still unaffected PDF and local mm-hmm. defense, whatever, everyone's waiting for the Slaaneshi onslaught. Who steps out in front? Typhus, some other Nurgle lord, because it's a plague. He's like, but I thought I'd get creative with my plague. It's a mind virus. Like they're expecting some sort of Slaaneshi. They're like, no, this is all Nurgle. I thought I'd do something interesting to get my lord's attention. Yeah, so Nurgle plagues can come in a variety of forms. Anything that can be spread virulently. Because you got the mm-hmm. airborne illnesses that can be breathed in or flesh eating necroticism, whatever. But he thought, no one's ever done a soundborne plague before. Surely it's possible with the metaphysics available to us, our demonic capabilities and all that sort of thing. I'm going to try it. And it worked.
Let me check the list of things I can do with the warp. All it says is, fuck you, I can do whatever I want.
Pretty much. Now, the Zinchin thing, things are going to get tentacly and feathery and fiery.
Yeah.
Because that's the Zinchin's thing, tentacles, feathers, and fire. And lots of spell
casting.
And
it's going to be a mind fuck the entire time.
It's going to be the worst of all acid trips. Kind of the most straightforward demonic recursion is going to be your coronate one.
Yeah.
There's going to be blood everywhere.
It's going to be straight out of Doom.
It's going to be an absolute slaughter.
Yeah.
They're like the quintessential, like, stereotypical demons in terms of the blood letters, you know.
Yeah.
Great tall horns, red, long, serpent-like tongues and hooves.
Mm-hmm.
And swords that rip human space marines to pieces. And that's just the standard blood letters. Some of them ride these giant-ass brass juggernauts, their own form of cavalry, and that'll suck. But it's also very straightforward. And it'll happen very quickly because it's all melee-oriented. So, you know, if you're an Imperial citizen and you're under assault by a coronate demonic incursion, good news, it'll be over quickly.
It's the best kind.
Bad news, it'll be over quickly, so no help will arrive.
Yeah.
But good news, it'll be over quickly.
I'm trying to think what would be the longest. Probably Slaanesh.
Because... possibly.
Either that or Nurgle.
Yeah, Slaanesh or Nurgle, because...
Well, Lord of Change.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Corn is going to be the fastest one. It depends on, again, the other three kind of depend on the nature of the leader of the demonic incursion in particular. Nothing is fast about Nurgle in any way, shape, or form. His whole thing, Nurgle invasions just as whole, be it demonic or otherwise, are these slow, plodding onslaughts that they're not fast, but they don't stop.
Then again, the Lord of Change will probably be the longest because he's been there for 400 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's been in the works for 400 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the Slashy ones will be quick enough, too, because they are very fast.
Yeah.
They're
also going to murder fuck everything to death.
Right, but they'll do it quickly because they get bored very quickly with new sensations. So they need to go off and find a new one.
True.
So, it'd probably be a toss between Nurgle and Zinj as far as the slowest. That's just demonic incursions.
In your opinion, which one would be the worst?
Ooh. Based on what I've read, I would actually have to say Nurgle.
Yeah.
Because in the book Blood of Azahim, 10 space wolves are sent to aid a planet that's beleaguered by a Nurgle invasion. It's the last, and it's a important world because it's a shrine world. And they're going to send to the capital city to help sister battle in the local PDF. Nurgle sends things ahead of his host. Refugees. Infected with a time bomb of a plague. So they seem fine, whatever, you know. And then they get into the place that they're fleeing to, and they feel a little sick, and then they keep repeating some trigger, you know, some keyword or whatever, as they get sicker, wander out into the street full of people, and detonate to sow terror ahead of them. Nurgle would probably be the worst, because there's no knowing who might or might not be already a victim of the plague that's coming.
Anyone not in a void suit.
Yeah. Beyond that, they kind of rely a little bit on terror,
mm-hmm.
because to send ahead of them, both in the form of sending a refugee or whatever, and they allowed some picked captures to escape from cities that they've taken in order to sow terror further in the higher-ups, in the intelligence committee. So, yeah.
I mean, and that's just horrifying from, like, an administrator's perspective of, what do I do? Do I just start, like, killing everyone that...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, how do we stop...
And you can't evacuate people.
Especially if you're the last bastion, you can evacuate as best you can. I mean, they certainly tried their best, but as slow as Nurgle advances are, they're still not fast enough to get everyone out, and not slow enough to give you adequate time to prepare, because they've come with enough numbers.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, is the Nurgle invasions, they're very much horde. Everything, every sort of demonic invasion is a horde invasion, but the Nurgles bring the most. That then the party grows as it goes along.
Yeah.
Nurgle invasion probably be the worst, honestly. Even as a space marine, it'd be the worst.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to engage with, if you're fighting other Nurgle marines, ones who have been around since even Great Crusader before, they'll be trying to just banter with you like you're another battle brother who they're trying to kill, and you'll be having none of it. Again, Blood of Azheim, the main commander's a Death Guard who's been around since pre-heresy. And he's fighting this young upstart space wolf, kind of the swordmaster character or whatever. And he's like, okay, you know, I'll humor you, you know, rather than strike you down like I easily could. Let's have a little go of it. Let's see how the space wolves sword masters fight these days. I'm interested. I always liked your Fenrisian styles of sword play. Let's have a go. And Space Wolf's just like,
I fucking hate you.
I'm going to kill you. And he's like, oh, come on, humor me, whatever. And Space Wolf, you know, like, fucking having none of this, just attacks. And he's, you know, going in the Nurgle Marine's going back and forth, and you're moving surprisingly fast for this bloated, horrible thing that he is. And is just jovial the entire time, and the Space Wolf's getting more and more frustrated because he's not able to enjoy it, because he's being kind of mocked a little bit. Because like, he'll stab the death card. It won't do anything because death card. And the card's like, ooh, that's a that wonderful strike. It is when, you know, back in the day, that would have killed any number one of my brothers, including myself. But in my current form, well, you have to do a little bit better than that. And then he gets bored, and he's like, okay. Playtime's over. Enough fun. I'm going to kill you now. And he does. It wouldn't even be fun as a Space Marine, and that's saying something. If you can't have fun fighting things as a Space Marine, you just can't have fun.
It's true. Fuck.
Yep. Now, on the note of invasions, similar sort of plotting, slow, methodical invasions. Word bearers.
Yeah.
Because as they're going along, they're making offerings of the local populace to their gods, and to summon demonic allies, it requires offerings. So their advances aren't particularly quick, but they're entirely messy. They're rounding up prisoners, making sacrifices here and there, but then they also round up the populace to make mass sacrifices. And if you happen to be unlucky enough to be a Space Marine, they will crucify you to the front of their rhinos.
Damn.
Or to the front of their vehicles, whatever else is there.
Yeah.
You'll be alive the entire time, because that's the point. Demoralization, also because they hate all loyalists, whatever, what have you. But yeah, being on the receiving end of a word bearer's invasion would probably be the worst way to go, too. One of the worst ways to go.
Yeah.
What you got over there on your list?
Because honestly,
we just hit some doozies.
Yeah, in my opinion, probably one of the most horrifying ways. And this requires a bit of setup. So, we've mentioned servitors before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, servitors all require human brains
and bodies.
But I mean,
as the chassis,
yeah.
They'll be modified.
Yeah. But can you imagine being lobotomized and turned, you know, your brain turned into a servitor, but there's still some part of you deep inside that has no control over anything.
But is fully cognizant.
Because you never know.
Because as long as the majority of your brain obeys the instruction wafers that they put into each servitor, they don't care what's left.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point. They don't care what's left. So, you know, if there's nothing left, all's the better. But they don't, as long as they get the key areas that make you fully obedient to those instruction wafers that they put into each servitor to fulfill its task, they don't care what's left. There could still be some lights on in there. You just can't do anything about it.
Or, like, the ability to still feel pain.
Yeah, they won't care about that.
I know, like, but imagine...
Feel pain, but not do anything to shy away from it, because you're a servitor. You must obey your instruction wafer.
Yeah.
And they're called wafers for some reason, you know, not instruction chips or whatever. So, or, you know, data chips or, you know, instruction cartridges or whatever. No, they're literally called instruction wafers, and that's the most horrifying thing, because they don't say, at least for my where they insert them. I guess it varies on the servitor model. So you're calling instruction wafers, like, what, are you sticking it in the dumb thing's mouth?
Well, the thing about wafers is that's what they call, like, the actual board. Like motherboards, it's a motherboard like wafer, like the gotcha. Material it's made out of.
Gotcha. I didn't know that because I'm basically tech illiterate, so that makes more sense than what I had in my mind. It's just like a digitized version of a communion wafer being stuck into the servitor's mouth.
Yeah,
though in a non secular Imperium that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
In the 40k, in the 40-verse one, that would make a whole lot of sense. I mean, it must be some sort of act of religious homage to the Emperor. So they're, you know, you were fulfilling your religious duty to the Emperor as a servitor. Here's your communion wafer.
Imagine, like, still...
Oof, that got grimmer.
Imagine still being able to feel exhausted.
But not being able to do anything, because you got the mechanics to keep your muscle, the skeleton bits moving.
It would be, like, perpetual hell.
Yes. Now, it depends on, I guess, that being a potential is kind of dependent on...
What your
function as a servitor is.
I mean...
And where you'll be implemented as a server. Because I imagine servers that go to, you know...
Super
important... Just super important individuals are of the utmost highest quality. So they'll ensure that nothing but the absolute essentials remains in the servitor's brain. So, you know, if you're being turned into a servitor, hope is for someone important. Because then the lights will not be on when they're done with you.
Or, I mean, if you're a servo skull. Servo skulls are generally...
Mm-hmm.
made with, like, you know, the bodies of important people.
Right.
And they're kept around important people and have probably the easiest job out of all the servitors.
Right. And literally, it's a skull. I don't know if there's a brain in it.
There is.
Oh, there is? Cool.
Any tech in 40K requires biomatter from humans, like
gross.
Parts of their brain to function.
In terms of servitors or server skulls or whatever.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
Yeah. So everything has some sort of...
So basically, if you want to be recycled in a way that you'll at least somewhat enjoy, make a point to be an important individual, because then you get to be a servo skull. Because then, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, being a servitor, which you're doing manual labor and just your body will get tired. You're just a skull.
And you get to fly.
You get to fly!
Yeah. Or if you go to, like, an agri world or something where, you know, you're out in the fields all day, which could be horrifying. I mean... But it's probably going to be a bit nicer than being in some manufactorum.
Industrial hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you get sent to an agri world as a servitor, at least you get to spend some time outside.
True.
If your lights are on.
Yeah.
If any of your lights are on, at least then you get to spend time outside. But maybe they'll send the indoorsy types to the agri worlds as punishment and the outdoorsy types to the industrial hells.
But you have no idea, like, how much of that person is still in there with their brain.
Right, and they're...
Because, I mean...
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to them. As long as they function as they're supposed to as a servitor, it doesn't matter what's left in that brain.
And, I mean, it's not like they're doing it on purpose, but it's impossible to tell because it's...
Right.
Like, how much of a lobotomized... Like, back when they did lobotomies...
Back when lobotomies were the hip new thing that everyone was trying.
Like, how much of them is left? You don't know.
Right, you can, I mean, with modern ways of measuring brain activity and brain function and functionality or whatever, there'd be, like, a better picture.
But we still have very fundamental ideas.
Right, because ultimately the story of Earth and the universe itself, Earth and this place in the universe, is the universe trying to understand itself, and the human brain is also just trying to understand itself. And it turns out the human brain, very complex thing, very hard to understand how it works score mechanically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We as human brains cannot understand our own brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, back to the topic at hand, because that got a little intellectual for a second.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. But hey, at least it's a Halloween episode.
I know.
Gotta do some terrifying things in the Halloween episode. Going back to invasions, or just military action as a whole, being attacked or invaded or raided by the Night Lords. Because the Night Lords are the masters of all terror tactics. We mentioned them on the Halloween special last year. But I think it's kind of hard to overstate just how good at it they are. Because for one, you know, they'll attack you in the dead of night because they are quite literal creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Quite literal space marines. But they'll also make a point to flense the bodies of the dead to leave as, you know, terrible thing, terrible warnings, whatever. And they'll also booby-trap the bodies of the dead or wounded. So, you know, leave some comrades behind. You know, they'll raid and then they'll give back that ground. They'll be the bodies of the dead or wounded. And if they're space marines, well, then you gotta go for the gene seed. Go try to find the gene seed. Yeah. And there'll be booby-traps there to kill apothecaries and what have you. And that's just on the space marine side of things. They're, again, quite little. The best way to summarize why it's horrifying to be attacked by Night Lords is when they were giving the answer of why the wolves were sent to deal with the Thousand Sons, because the wolves would do it quickly and cleanly.
Mm-hmm.
The Night Lords, if sent to kill a legion or planet or whatever, wouldn't do it quickly.
Yeah.
They'd make sure that it was done in such a horrifying enough way over a long period of time that no one would ever want to risk that happening again.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't just kill the physical. They would kill the morale in the process.
Yeah.
To the point where they'd focus on killing the morale before killing the physical, because if you kill the morale, then the physical won't have the willpower to fight back.
Yeah.
They go after morale hardcore. In terrifying ways. Like, their Primarch became known as the Night Haunter. He was, you know, Comrade Kershaw. And we'll talk a little bit about the backstory. When he landed on Nostromo, it's a completely benighted world. Completely criminally corrupt, up to the highest level. And he was having none of this. Unfortunately, he didn't have the same upbringing as most of the Primarchs. He didn't have a family, anyone to take him in as a father figure or whatever. So he just raised himself in the streets, feeding off whatever he could, dressing himself in rags. And when he decided he'd had enough of all the crime, whatever, he would send warnings to the higher-ups, like, clean up the streets or I will. Okay, yeah, whatever, you know, who are you? So he started going after the key members of the planetary government and stringing them up, flensed outside the planetary government building as warnings, like, I warned you. and he or she's next written on the victim's blood. It's a bluff, you know, we'll just increase security. Nope. Nope. And it became such a point where he didn't need to control, be, you know, elected leader. He was just kind of the de facto crime cleanup itself. Like, you know, I will be back before, you know, by the end of shift or whatever, after end of shift, you know, I won't linger at night because the Night Haunter might get me. Might think I'm up to no good, might get me. Yeah.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was basically Hobo Batman with no rules. He didn't have Batman's one rule of don't kill anyone. He's like, no, that's step one. That step one is kill them. Step two is do horrible things with their corpse to send warnings. Mm-hmm.
That's some Scarface.
And he taught the rest of his legion in the same way. So it's an entire legion, entire Shattered Legion, Warbands or whatever, of Chaos Marines who very much practice such teachings. Yeah. You don't want to be attacked by Nightlords. No.
Now, I'd say probably some of the other horrifying ways to die, the Necron's flayers.
Yes, the flayed ones. I don't know if they're still a thing in the lore currently, but when they were, Necron flayed ones are Necron constructs who something went wrong in their cognitive wiring or whatever, to the point where they feel like they need to consume and wear human flesh, even though they can't actually consume anything.
Yeah.
Because they don't have stomach. They munch on this shit, on the living flesh, and it just drips down their fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Then they flense their victims and wear the skin because reasons. It was described as like a virus in their coating, just in like this specific sex. So, you know, like the Necron ones who were capable of more sentience than that, like, well, we'll make the most of it. Let's give them basically Freddy Krueger hands.
Mm-hmm.
And
they can materialize.
They dig their way out of the ground. They're tunnelers.
Yeah. In the Dead Men Walking, they have ones that just materialize, kill things, and then dematerialize. So you can't even shoot them.
Great.
Yeah, you can only shoot them for brief moments of time. And they can come out of nowhere, come out of walls, come out of the ground, come out of... they can appear inside a middle of a guardsman, fillet 10, 15 guardsmen, and then dematerialize before you can even shoot them.
Quite similar to the Dark Eldar Mandrake. Dark Eldar Mandrake's kind of similar in that they can materialize anywhere, but not quite anywhere. Anywhere that's got a shadow. Even the slightest sliver of one. Because that's their portal to the material world. No one, not even the Dark Eldar, are quite sure where the Mandrakes have come from. They just sort of popped up here and there in the Dark Eldar home of Kamora. And they can be engaged with, bargained with. They live in the lowest levels of the city, the horrible city of Kamora. And only the most desperate of the Archons, or the most ambitious of the homunculi, employ their services. But when they do, they get results. Because they can, basically, they're assassination squads, or do they go after key targets, whatever, because they're master infiltrators, because anything that casts a shadow has given them a very convenient doorway to where they need to go.
Yeah.
Without warning, except for things getting very cold, very suddenly, and then they pop out of nowhere and do horrible things and go back into the shadows.
Yeah.
The only real defense against a Mandrake is to illuminate everything so that there are no shadows.
But that's impossible. Nearly.
Nearly. And there's no way to know whether or not Mandrakes will come into play because they've already come into play. And after that, just getting the lighting resources, well, it doesn't matter. They've already come to play. They've done what they needed to do.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's hard to set up that many lights that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah. Got something else on your list?
Because
I've run through most of mine. I'm saving one of them for last. But we are running a little bit closer to time.
Yeah.
So I will wrap up with this as a bonus thing. It's not a way to die in Warhammer 40K. It's a way to die back in Warhammer Fantasy pre-Age of Sigmar. I don't know what Age of Sigmar lore is like with this particular topic. But it's... being taken by Dark Eldar is bad as a prisoner. Mm-hmm. Being taken by Skaven as a prisoner is perhaps probably worse. Because Dark Eldar will at least eventually kill you. Being taken by Skaven, well, you'll never see the light of day. Well, you might not see the light of day again. No, there's not a whole lot of good things to be happened when you get taken as prisoner by Skaven. Probably the best thing that could happen is you turn into food.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing that could be happened, though, is if you're taken prisoner by Clan Mulder. They're responsible for all of the mutated flesh constructs that the Skaven employ.
Ooh.
And the way that they employ them is they basically just stick you in a pen or a hole or whatever, and just piles of warpstone next to you. Because that is a very... it's a basically radioactive toxic thing that causes mutation with prolonged exposure. More is added to your pile to see what kind of mutations you spring. And if you spring up useful mutations, they'll get to the point where, you know, they get the results they wanted, cool.
Otherwise, they're going to keep piling that warp stone up next year.
You think Deadpool was bad?
Yeah, this is worse.
Yeah, being taken prisoner as Clan Mulder would not be great.
No.
No.
And that's the thing, too, is, like, the amount of time it would take to, you know, genetically...
It's not a fast process.
No.
Not at all. Yup.
That's pretty bad.
Yes, it is. Definitely not the worst, though, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
One of the worst ways to go in the Warhammer Fantasy universe, for sure.
It's actually kind of amusing we haven't even mentioned, like, Tyranids, but at the same time, like, Tyranids...
Tyranids are a process unto their own. I guess we could finish on that. Just go back. So the way a Tyranid invasion works is that there's meteor showers all across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
At least what appear to be meteor showers. Except with things that it's all these different spore mines, whatever, that basically form the foundations of any Tyranid invasion. They form beachheads and blockheads, whatever, that convert into bio-melting pits or whatever. And then that's the opening salvo of the direct invasion. Prior to that, I think it's the Lictors and Gene Stealers come up first, infiltrate their way in.
Yeah.
But the rest of the fleet is not usually very far behind.
Mm-hmm.
After that initial thing, that because it's also, that's how they land their troops. You know, they land these in, and that's when they start growing the Tyranid critters to make the initial push. And after that, they land their bigger bioconstructs that then discord more Hormogons and Turbogons and more Gene Stealers, more bigger things. And they consume all organic matter as well, but they eat it. They don't melt it. As a guardsman, not great, because the Tyranids are also highly resilient and adaptable. So you hit them with things that shred them up real good, and you repel that first wave. Good for you! It won't work again.
Nope.
Even if you tried an interesting tactic where you set traps and booby traps and explosives in a certain way, cool. You beat back that wave using remote detonate explosives in key areas to adapt to that. Cool. They will now send burrowing constructs to dig these things out and perhaps just neutralize them or use them against you.
Yeah.
Have fun.
See, at the same time, like, it's still horrifying and, like it would be a terrible way to die. It still isn't topped by, like, demonic incursions and stuff.
Right, because they're eating.
They kill you quick.
They eat you alive, sure, but they do it quickly. You know, they cut your head off, whatever, and eat you. And you're dead quickly. It's painful. It's painful as shit.
For brief amounts of time.
But the most horrifying part is the onslaught of it.
Yeah.
Once it actually makes contact, well, if you're a guardsman, it's usually over quite quickly. If you're not part of the line that doesn't hold, or you're just part of one of the casualties, it's usually done quite quickly, unless you're being hit with their ranged weapons, you know, their bio-ranged weapons from the Hormagaunts, I think it is, the ones that shoot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, it's very close range, it's going to be very painful, it's going to melt your insides or melt your flesh or whatever. You'll be dead pretty quickly, though.
Yeah.
Because they don't care about the suffering of their food. They're
just eating you.
They're eating you. Like,
it's like being eaten alive by lions.
And they want to do it in the most efficient way possible, and it's not particularly efficient if your food is wriggling around on the plate still. I mean, sometimes the plate is, a trench line or a whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not efficient if your food is wriggling around and still able to resist. That's just not efficient.
Yeah.
So.
You know, also on terms of, like, psychological horror, being left, like, as guardsmen, being left behind before, you know, an exterminatus event.
Right, you are the rear guard, you don't get evacuated.
Yeah, because, I mean, even with Space Marines, there's been times where you can't evacuate, and you have to wait for your own death.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you know the time that exterminatus is coming...
Right, and the difference between that, though, is... As a guardsman, it's an involuntary, I'm fucked.
Mm-hmm.
As a Space Marine, it's a solemn, who wants to volunteer for the honor of holding the line long enough to get everyone else to safety.
True.
And it's usually 10 dudes.
Yeah.
It's usually a squad, and that's enough. I guess being on the receiving end of a Necron invasion would be pretty bad, too.
Yeah.
Because that's another slow, methodical advance, and there's no battle cries or screaming on the Necron's end, because they're all soulless constructs except for their commanders.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I mean,
not as terrifying as the slow, plodding onslaught of Death Guard.
Yeah. I mean, what's also horrifying with any of these incursions is just the fact that cults and shit are going to start popping up, and they are going to be their own flavor of horrifying shit they're doing.
Because,
I mean, with Tyranids, you have the Gene Stealer cults. Mm-hmm. For demonic incursions, you have Choose Cult.
Yes, you know, you get your Slaanesh, your Khorne, your Nurgle. Not a whole lot of Zinchian cults. You want to know why?
Because they're already in all the other cults.
Leading them.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, when back on, you know, if Nate were here for this, he'd say, you know, every single one of the other demonic incursions is going to have be influenced by Tzeentch in some way.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Even if they don't quite realize it.
With Necrons even get cults that spring up because they think they can serve and survive the overlords.
If we serve them enough, they'll turn us into one of them, and then we get to live forever. It's like, yes, you understand. Sure, but you understand that that's not really living forever. You get your general sort of bare-bones sentience gets put into this skeletal contract, but you don't want to live that life. Now, we haven't mentioned the orcs.
Orcs?
I mean, that's terrifying, yeah. But in the face of everything else we've mentioned, like, yeah, sure, orc invasion, horrifying. I guess to a point, because as they're rampaging through a hive city, that's where the outside walls have fallen, they're making sport of the human populace. But, like, only so much as they enjoy the humans running away for a little bit, and then they gun them down or chop them down or whatever. You know, sometimes they'll take them for prisoner, but not all that often either, because they're orcs.
They're not that intelligent.
Yeah, the most horrifying thing is just the initial onslaught and how angry and hyper-violent it is. But, I mean, compared to the hyper-violence of pretty much everything else in First Millennium,
it's...
Yeah.
And,
like, don't get me wrong, being on the receiving end of an orc attack ain't great.
Yeah.
It's definitely horrifying, but, like, it's... Compared to everything we talked about here...
The horrifying thing is that you'll never... Even if you beat them back, there will never be getting rid of them.
Yeah, not unless you literally scorch the earth that they've died on.
Yeah.
Because they release, you know, the spores that become more orcs.
Or in Valhalla's case, you know, the planet just freezes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just a small handful of the horrifying ways to die in 41st Millennium, plus one to die in Fantasy World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many horrifying ways to die.
Yep.
Horrifying ways to die.
Happy Halloween, Shieldbearers. Thank you so very much for listening to us once again. And wherever you're listening to us, too, be it iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever, do not forget to subscribe if you are not subscribed already. And if you have any suggestions for future topics of Lore Council, General Nerd Sense, or Loose Brews, head on over to our Facebook page, shieldwallproductions@facebook.com, or
hit us up on Twitter at the official SWP. Whether or not you want to send us more horrifying shit or just horrifying ways to die in 40K, or... You just want to shoot the shit and talk. I'm more than happy to do that as well.
Indeed. And until next time, spooky shield barrows. We shall catch you later. Doodles.